Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. On today's show, we've been getting reactions to the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg from people here in Illinois. Earlier, we heard from Senator Dick Durbin. Then we spoke with a law clerk who worked with Justice Ginsburg on the court. And now for some perspective on her legal legacy and how her passing could affect future court cases, particularly in the area of reproductive rights, we're joined by Bridget Leahy. She's the director she is with Planned Parenthood Illinois Action. Bridget, welcome to the 21st. Thank you for being here.
Hi, Brian. Thank you very much for having me on today.
And we are also joined by Alicia Uribe McGuire, who is Assistant Professor of Political Science at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Welcome to you, Alicia. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you, Brian.
And listeners, if you have a question about Justice Ginsburg's legal legacy, or you're interested in weighing in on what you think should happen next in terms of her vacancy, we spoke with Senator Durbin earlier about that, but we'd love to hear from you at 800-222-9455. The number is 800-222-9455. So, Bridget Leahy, I want to ask, begin with you. As somebody who has worked on women's reproductive health issues for a long time, I presume that is, you know, something that has been top of mind for you in recent days. But I wonder more broadly, what do you think is Justice Ginsburg's most important legacy?
Thank you, Brian. First, before I answer that question, I just want to express Planned Parenthood's profound sorrow at Justice Ginsburg's passing. And recognize and honor all of the contributions that she has given to us across the country, not just as a justice of the Supreme Court, but also going back to her days as a litigator with the ACLU's Women's Rights Project. Her entire career has been of service, defending and advocating for all of our rights. And when it comes to reproductive rights, of course, Justice Ginsburg was a leader. She was a profound voice on the court, whether she was in the majority ruling or whether she was dissenting on an opinion. She made sure to keep in mind the very real lives of women. And I think in part that is because she knew what it was like to face discrimination and experience discrimination. And she always held that and looked at that when she was weighing in on a court case. So she will be sorely missed. And the future of reproductive rights, definitely, and access to reproductive health care is now deeply at risk because of her absence.
And Professor Alicia Uribe McGuire, same question to you. What do you think is Justice Ginsburg's most important legacy?
I'd say definitely her work in kind of discrimination against women, and even just broadly gender discrimination. One of her first cases actually dealt with discrimination against a man. So, you know, we saw it both in her work as a lawyer with ACLU, and then as she transitioned onto the DC circuit and then onto the Supreme Court as well. So certainly she's had a profound effect in that area.
Bridget, are you concerned that if the court changes ideologically, if the Republicans confirm a successor for Justice Ginsburg, that Roe versus Wade could be overturned?
Yes. Right now, there are at least a dozen, or I think more than a dozen, cases that are in the pipeline that are related to reproductive rights and reproductive health care. At the most extreme, Roe v. Wade could be overturned, or another scenario is that it could be left in name, but completely hollowed out so that it is meaningless in large areas of the country. And an example I would give for that is something like reversing more recent rulings that have happened in the court One just last year on a Louisiana abortion restriction that was very similar to a case that was struck down a few years prior in the Whole Woman's Health case, that if you looked at what happened in Texas as a result of the law that was struck down, the majority of abortion providers had to stop services in that state. So you could have Roe v. Wade be in place, but the court could uphold such onerous restrictions that it is not accessible and is not really a right for women living on the ground where they are.
What would be the consequences in Illinois if that were to happen? I know that different parts of the country have different restrictions. There was a big legislative action a couple of years ago here, or maybe it was even just 1 year ago. Time has been sort of distended for us all this year in the pandemic, but to address this possibility, right? Should
You know, it does seem like it was longer than just last year that we passed the Reproductive Health Act. With the Trump administration's, blocking of the Gorsuch nomination, which Senator Durbin talked about, and then with the appointments under Trump, we definitely anticipated that things were not going the way of support for reproductive rights at our highest court. And therefore, in Illinois last year, we pushed for the passage of the Reproductive Rights Act, which for the first time recognizes in our state law a fundamental right for an individual to make decisions around reproductive health care. And that is the full range of reproductive health care. It includes abortion, but it's also decisions about whether to get pregnant, use of birth control, use or refusal to use birth control, including sterilization. It is about the fundamental right to be able to make decisions about your pregnancy, prenatal care, delivery, and abortion. And I want to stress the importance of that full range of reproductive rights and reproductive health care, because it's more than Roe that's at stake at the court. Senator Durbin mentioned the Affordable Care Act and how that would be one of the first things that we might face without Justice Ginsburg. That law includes a number of women's health provisions, including a requirement to cover birth control. If we lose that law, millions of women across the country would lose their birth control coverage, which is fundamental health care for women. So this goes well beyond issues around abortion specifically. It is about the full range of reproductive health care that people, men and women, should have access to, and that their decisions should be between them and their health care provider without the government stepping in between and blocking access.
Listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Bridget Leahy of Planned Parenthood Illinois Action and Alicia Uribe McGuire of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, where she is a professor of political science. And Alicia, as I understand, you study the intersection of the judiciary and other branches of government. A few years ago, you co-authored a paper on declining public support for the U.S. Supreme Court. Can you talk about that research?
Yeah, absolutely. So my research actually in large part has focused on appointments. So that has been kind of my primary area of research, but I've also done some other research looking at the intersection of the court and other branches. So we've definitely seen declining public support for the court in the last few decades. It's still the most popular of the branches of government, but we're starting to see something much more akin to the political split we have traditionally seen for the president and for Congress. And so my research, as well as some other research, has found that as the courts support wanes, it opens up the court to attacks from other branches, particularly from Congress, either in terms of court curbing legislation, which is legislation geared at trying to strip the power of the court, either through jurisdiction or through reducing the size of the judiciary, as well as potential attacks on the decisions of the court. So my paper in particular, we were looking at overrides of Supreme Court decisions and found that that was tied to public support.
You know, earlier in the show, Alicia, I mentioned this with Senator Durbin, but over the weekend, I saw someone noting that depending on the what the president does now, it's possible Republicans will have nominated 6 of 9 Supreme Court justices despite winning the popular vote just once in the last 3 decades, in 2004. I wonder, what does that say about the legitimacy of the U.S. Supreme Court? Is that one of the factors, or what factors have you identified as that has led to this weakening of esteem for the court in the public's mind?
So in terms of what's led to that, I think part of it is an awakening of recognition that the court in some ways does feel a very political role. So I know there's been discussion of the role of Bush versus Gore in the decline of public support for the judiciary, but it is not necessarily entirely that. So I think in part what we're seeing is the court is becoming the final kind of nail in the polarization we're seeing between the parties just within the country at large. So we've seen it in Congress since the 1990s. We've started to see it in the electorate more broadly, probably in the last 10 to 15 years. And I think that is resulting itself in kind of changing levels of public support for the court as well.
Yeah, and we have this idea, right, that the Supreme Court is supposed to be apolitical, but obviously the reaction to Justice Ginsburg's death puts the lie to that idea. But I mean, Alicia, was the Supreme Court ever really an apolitical institution?
I mean, I think as you go, I mean, I don't know if it's ever been fully apolitical. I think that there has certainly been eras where the court is less so. I'd say certainly starting in probably the Warren era, we've started to see much more politicization on the court in terms of the role of the decisions that judges are making. But we've also, so there was a norm of consensus on the Supreme Court up until about the 1930s, where we rarely saw dissents on the court. And so it was hard to really pin down where the justices' ideologies were. But as we've started to see an increase in dissents, I think it's become more clear the role that politics can play.
Bridget, we only have a couple of minutes left in our conversation, but my last question to you, there has been this line of thinking, I'm sure you've heard this argument, that maybe ultimately it was not great that it had to, that it was the U.S. Supreme Court that sort of tried to settle the question of abortion access in the 1970s, that legislatures were trending in that direction, and that maybe if the court does eventually weaken or overturn Roe, there will be a new sort of popular movement to restore abortion rights. What do you make of that argument, Bridget Leahy?
Well, I have to say that that is a tough thing to think about, because in the absence of Roe, you would have to go state by state in order to ensure reproductive rights for all individuals. And that could take a generation to do. And it really should not matter in the United States what your zip code is, what your rights are. I think that it would have been equally troubling if the same opinion was given to, say, major decisions around civil rights. If we had said, oh, you know, the court really shouldn't have decided Brown versus Board of Education, we should have left that to states. Who knows how long it would have taken, or if we would have ever gotten to a place where all of the states would have recognized children's rights to equal education. So given that, I really believe that it is important that all across this country, no matter where you live, no matter who you are, what your background is, you should have some basic fundamental rights. And one of them is bodily autonomy and the ability to make personal healthcare decisions that are best for you and to not have the government interfering with those decisions.
And we're going to have to leave it there. Bridget Leahy is with Planned Parenthood Illinois Action. We've also been speaking with Professor Alicia Uribe McGuire of the University of Illinois Champaign. Thank you both so much for being with us today. And that is all the time we have. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey.